Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. Your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, brought to you by Fear the Sword, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers blog, and the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My guest today is Mike Zavgano from FearTheSword.com. And Mike, there seems like there's not a lot to talk about, it's not like the Cavs just parted ways with the GM who orchestrated three straight title appearances, and who LeBron James said deserved an extension, and who apparently, it's not like LeBron James was a consultant on this, and it's not like the Cavs are being linked to a guy who has no front office experience. That'll happen Monday night. I'm always curious about this. Where were you when you saw this? And you saw that this news had broken. You got that first windy tweet about it.
I was in my apartment here, just looking at my phone, per usual, chilling on Twitter. Saw the new tweet from Brian Windhorst alert pop up. If you don't have tweet notifications on for Windy at this point in time, I think you're doing it wrong. So, you obviously see that pop up and you check it out, and it's just horrible news. And so that obviously sets off the spiral. You're waiting for some more context to break, but obviously seeing the news and on the 1 year anniversary of winning the title, it's a pretty brutal thing to
I didn't even think about that. That is insane.
Yeah, I mean, think about, taking a team to the championship and then on the 1 year anniversary of the biggest accomplishment in the city's history of basketball, the guy who orchestrated it all is let go. So
let's talk about this. I'm not surprised that this is the case. I thought, as further as this went along, I thought it was more likely that Griff could be on his way out. I want to point out there was a quote that Dave McVenderman from ESPN attributed to to David Griffin, and he basically kind of said that there was some. It was a fit thing. Like, Griffin sort of implied that the two didn't fit together very well. That is sort of in line with a lot of what we have heard about that, about their relationship. I mean, it's also just very telling that David Griffin has never re-signed a general manager since taking over as Cavs owner over a decade ago. Things could change. Things could ultimately work out, I guess. But I can't imagine. On its face, David Griffin being on his way out is a loss for the Cavs. Just, we'll see what happens. We'll see if things do change in some way, if things do work out in some way. But there's not a lot here that, if you're a Cavs fan, you should necessarily feel good about with David Griffin on his way out.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough, obviously, to see, that statement, see that it appears again as if Dan Gilbert's not getting along with a front office executive, as has happened in the past. obviously, you know, with a guy who's done as good of a job as David Griffin, I think that's how basically every Cavs fan feels about him, is that he's been excellent on the margins given the constraints of this team. It's pretty hard to look at what he's done and think that he's not provided a ton of surplus value in his role, and that he would be worthy of, you know, a contract extension or more leash or whatever it might have been. And so that's tough to see. And then obviously the news that, you know, the Cavs are considering bringing in Chauncey Billups, a guy who has no front office experience whatsoever. Obviously a guy linked to the city of Detroit, which seems to be the one common theme in everything that Dan Gilbert does. If you're from the city of Detroit or have some ties there, it obviously gives you a leg up, or so it appears. And so that's another thing that just is somewhat bothersome, only because it feels as if that's the impetus for the hire as opposed to something else, if Billups was indeed hired. And then, I mean, I don't really know how you would judge whether or not he has the capacity to kind of handle things in a leading role. You know, there was talk about Justin Zanuck from Mark Stein's tweet as the guy who may come in and ultimately be the GM under Chauncey Billups, which would give you a little bit more hope. Just because Zanuck seems to be a guy who's pretty well respected around the league. He was an agent for a long time. He went into the front office of the Jazz and then went over to the Bucks and then was a part of the wild saga that was the Bucks GM search that just concluded recently. So although the Bucks ultimately brought him in and then for some reason decided not to go in his direction, he does give you some confidence in a guy who's been around the league and seems to have built relationships and connections, and, you know, a guy who at least has some experience within the role.
Yeah, let's talk about we'll talk about one more thing about Griffin here. I think he handled it very classily. I think this says more about Dan Gilbert than it does anybody else. You know, I just want to say that I think like if this goes badly, if LeBron leaves, if the Cavs just fall apart in some way, I think it falls on Dan Gilbert's shoulders. Like I don't think there's really a way around that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Dan Gilbert has already shown his ability to push LeBron James out of town once, and it's pretty clear that, you know, in acting in this kind of rogue manner, if the reporting is correct on, you know, him not consulting with LeBron before the move. Obviously, LeBron has publicly endorsed Griffin, so that seems to be correct. You know, it would say a lot about where Dan Gilbert thinks he is, and it's, you know, really, really tough to see a guy like David Griffin, who, you know, has done so much for this team, and by all accounts, you know, everybody who talks to him and everything like that seems like an incredible human being. And obviously a great GM, and he's extremely well respected and well loved in this city. To see it end like this for him, it is really tough. Obviously, I'm sure he will find another job. He has the skills to do so.
He chooses. Should, honestly, like I he could wait a year. Jobs will open. Teams will throw money at him. His hometown Phoenix Suns, a team he worked for. I know he, you know, didn't leave on great terms with Robert Sarver, the owner out there, but he could probably get a job there, like if they fire McDonough, you know, in a year. There's going to be jobs that open.
Clippers.
Oh man, if Dan Gilbert's the one, or if David Griffin's the one who lures LeBron to the Clippers in LA, like, not going to go good for Dan Gilbert. Like the PR hits he will take will be insane. And they kind of already are. People, I mean, I would go on Twitter every day for the last month, and people would be tweeting at Cavs Dan, you know, pay Griff, and then this is where we ended up, you know, and seeing how he moved on. Before we get into the what's next and Billups in particular, I think it's insane that they didn't consult LeBron. Like,
oh yeah,
I'm not saying like the LeBron needed to like okay the decision. I don't think like that's necessarily true. Like it's Dan Gilbert's team. Like he's the one paying the contracts, and like it's LeBron James. He's a free agent next summer. He's apparently, per Howard Beck, disappointed and concerned about where the Cavs are headed. Like, Dan Gilbert and LeBron's relationship is already not great. It is already frosty. It is already tense, dating back to the decision. There's the uninterrupted thing where LeBron kind of said his mom and his wife didn't want him to come back because of Dan Gilbert. this is not going to help that relationship. This is not going to help LeBron's the likelihood of LeBron James being a Cleveland Cavalier for the rest of his career. Like, this is just, on any level, this to me makes almost no, this makes no sense to me that LeBron James wouldn't be made aware at the very least, if not consulted about this, because he's your star player. He's the reason you're winning. Like, he's the reason you've made it to the last three finals. He's the face of your franchise. He's the most important player in franchise history. It is insane that he was not consulted in some way.
Yeah, I mean, you're already in a somewhat confusing place with LeBron, you know, 1 year away from free agency. Obviously, it looked like Griff was doing a bunch of different things to attempt to improve the team on the trade front. And it's pretty clear that, you know, the team does need some upgrades in some way to compete with what Golden State has built. And, you know, if LeBron doesn't think that the team's ready to do that in a year, then, you never can be confident that he's just going to stay here because he's here. I mean, he's proven in the past that he's going to look for the right opportunities. And so to not consult him with this is, as you said, pretty crazy. I mean, if he doesn't have confidence that the new front office can build something that is worth sticking around for and is worth competing with Golden State, then it makes it even more ludicrous to do something like this. I mean, how can you remove a guy that LeBron clearly seemed to have a lot of confidence in and replace him with someone that could be a complete and total unknown? It's a really, really difficult decision-making process to understand.
And I don't want to, like, say, and I'm going to just say this. Like, everyone has pointed out this clip of Chauncey Billups going on ESPN and saying that he would trade Love for Carmelo Anthony. Like, that to me is a dumb opinion, right? But I also don't want to say, like, that should, you know, be our – it's not fair to him to say, like, that is his basketball – you know, that is, like, what he thinks of basketball, like, that is his philosophy. We don't really know what his philosophy is. And that in itself is sort of a problem, right? Like, if you go down to something as small as Chetty Osman, you know, does Billups even know who Chetty Osman is? Probably not. You know, like, just the likelihood of him knowing a European prospect and knowing what he could provide next year and having to be a guy who's part of that decision seems kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
like, does he know analytics? Like, does he know the cap? Like, does he know all this stuff? And is he like, it's just seems like a lot to me to for him to be like ready to lead a team with LeBron James on it. LeBron's 33, gonna be 33 next year. Is gonna be a free agent next summer. The team has made three titles in a row. This is not like you're entrusting him to do a rebuild, and you're kind of like everyone's learning together, a la like a Pelinka Magic Johnson setup, or you know, a John Lynch setup in San Francisco. This is like you're winning now. He has to make the right decisions right now. There's not really room for error, and it's just like this is. It just feels like crazy to me that like that would be what they would do, and it just seems like it seems likely, and I don't know. Like it just. It just seems like a huge roll of the dice for me, and no matter how you do it. Like, Zanuck could be great. Zanuck could be fantastic. But if Chauncey Billups is your final decision maker, and if Dan Gilbert is going to have more sway now with which seems likely to me with no Griffin around, that seems like a very significant change and a very significant issue there.
Yeah, I mean, history has not shine the brightest light on former players as front office executives, whether it's Joe Dumars, Isaiah Thomas, Vlade Divac, you know, a lot of guys who have made a lot of stumbles in that position because it is extremely hard, and it's gotten even harder as GMs across the league have gotten better and better. I mean, the qualification level that it takes to be a GM in the modern era, I think, is so high right now that just considering hiring, you know, a guy to make decisions who doesn't have any experience is really hard to justify in my eyes. And as you said, I think that, you know, Chauncey Billups, a guy who, you know, how can you really know what his knowledge base is, where he's coming from? I know he interviewed for the Hawks GM job. It didn't seem like he gained any traction there, so I'm not going to take away a lot of positive stuff from that. But it's one of those things where
As you said, I mean, the Cavs are in a delicate place right now. They obviously need to improve the team. We all know the lack of assets that they have to do so. I mean, no draft picks, obviously. It would be even more ridiculous if they had picks in the upcoming draft, which is, you know, obviously on Thursday. And then free agency right around the corner, plus all the trades that have been rumored, or, you know, trades that maybe haven't been talked about, but they're thinking about behind the scenes. I mean, these are all things that have to be done really, really intelligently, because the Cavs just don't have a ton of wiggle room to make themselves better. And so, you know, stepping into this situation basically blind and being asked to somehow, you know, carry this team to improvement over the offseason on a very quick timeline seems like a huge ask of anyone. I mean, even the most established GMs in the league.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think if you were going to, like, hire somebody, like, Zanuck, I guess that type of guy could make some sense, but, like, you would think they'd want someone that's done this before, that has been a veteran league executive, you know? Like, you don't think you'd want to entrust it to a guy who has never worked in a front office before.
I mean, I honestly don't think that even if they were hiring Bob Myers or R.C. Buford or something, just the timeline and the timing of the parting ways makes it – those guys would still, you know, have a couple days or whatever to get up to speed on exactly what's happening. And
it's like at least they've done something before.
Oh, yeah,
that's
for
like
sure.
That's like kind of what I think. It's just like if they would have at least signed someone or promoted Trent Redden and not let him leave as well – or, you know, just give the job to Kobe Altman and do something like that. Like, that to me would matter. And it's also just, like, why is there a need to give Billups a president of basketball operations role?
I mean, right? It seems like he wouldn't even give David Griffin that role, right?
So. No, that's what it seems like. And it just makes me wonder, like, is Dan Gilbert thinking he can control Chauncey Billups, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And that, like, you know, meddlesome ownership never really works well.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, like, there's not a good track record for it. Like, unless it's just like a money thing, like that doesn't work. And if, like, again, like if it goes south very quickly, things could happen. And like the Cavs are in this situation flux. Like David Griffin was like calling for deals about Jimmy Butler hours before he left. Right, like he was working up until he left.
Right.
Those dialogues basically are starting from scratch now. If you have new voices in there.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. Like, no matter who you're hiring right now, they would still have to get up to speed. They would still have to, you know, become, you know, aware of what the negotiations look like, what's on the table, take stock of how they personally feel about the Cavs' assets. And so no matter who you're hiring, it would be a process for anyone. And the brevity of the timeline with the draft being on Thursday and all the reporting coming out on, like, Paul George, like Zach Lowe saying that it seems from all indications that they want to move incredibly fast, maybe by the start of free agency even, that we're looking at a weeks long timeline for these people to somehow take stock of all the Cavs assets and then come to a decision on how they want to move forward. And I think that would be hard for even the most experienced of candidates.
Yeah. To quote, the great Charlie Pierce, this is at a certain someone in society right now, his pinned tweet. But I'm gonna pull this up. Charlie Pierce, the great writer for Esquire and for Grantland late, of course, he had this, his pinned tweet is, this, of course, insane. like, this is insane to me. Like, this idea that this is how the Cavs are going to kick off their offseason, it's just, like, the most dramatic thing possible, and it's, like, everything really feels on the table, you know?
Yeah,
like, there literally is nothing in terms of what the roster could look like that feels like it's secure.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, I was, you know, extremely confident in the notion that David Griffin would not be trading Kevin Love for Carmelo Anthony. Can you feel the same way about the new regime? We have no idea. I mean, you just can't have any inkling of a notion as to what their positions will be based on how they value both the Cavs assets and then, you know, the potential assets that they may be looking to acquire, whether it is a Paul George or a Jimmy Butler or someone else. You know, they might not feel the same way about Paul George and Jimmy Butler that David Griffin did, for instance. You just don't know, because a guy like Chauncey Billups and even a guy like Zanuck, they have no track record. So you can't even, you know, research their prior decisions and figure out what they might be thinking.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's even like we've seen people like, you know, Kyrie was untouchable under Griffin, and, you know, like people have, there's a report already that teams have been calling about Kyrie, you know, like that kind of gauging how available he is. Like, this is, it would shock me if like Kyrie was traded, you know. But like, is Love, I mean, like, this Love stuff kind of in against it again, and like, you know, are you even prepared to like make the deal for a George or Jimmy Butler in that type of situation? I mean, do you have any like parting takes on this GM situation? Because then we're going to talk about the trades for a second, because that also happened on Monday. But do you have any like other kind of read on this situation and what you kind of think of what's going on with the Cavs right now?
I mean, I think that as I said, I'm skeptical, to say the least, of a guy who has no front office experience whatsoever coming in. The Justin Zanuck thing makes me feel a bit better, but the timing of it is very concerning given the timelines that it appears the Cavs are on, and the structures that they're facing with when the draft and when free agency are. So those guys getting up to speed, especially for people who have never held the role, is very concerning to me. But obviously, as a parting word, I think you just have to, you know, thank David Griffin for everything that he did for this franchise. I think that people really respect and appreciate him as a person, and how he's involved himself in this community, and then obviously what he did as a general manager was extremely good, given the constraints that the Cavs had. He was able to make the moves at the margins that ultimately resulted in our first championship for the city of Cleveland. So, you know, regardless of how you feel about every single move he made, he ultimately was at the helm when that happened, and I think that, you know, he'll always be remembered fondly by Cavs fans.
Yeah, I think whenever he pops up again, people will be excited. Let's talk about the deals here for a second. I think Butler might, like, you could argue Butler's better. I think you could argue that. I think George is probably a better fit. That's kind of where I come down on the two. Like, I think George is probably a better fit with the Cavs. That being said, I still find it very unlikely that either deal could be really realistic. Like, I just have a hard time seeing those deals coming together. I think even more so now, I think they'd have to be three-team deals in all likelihood. What comes with those deals, it, to me, is just very interesting. All these other teams could certainly offer more for these players. Like, the Wolves have a better package for Butler. The, you know, a team like the Lakers, if they decide to deal for George, like, would have a better, you know, offer for package for Paul George, and he maybe wants to go there anyway. I mean, just what do you make of the ongoing trade talks with about Butler and George? Like, they're obvious that they're going to happen to me, but it just, they don't seem like, especially with this news, don't seem like particularly likely for me to happen.
Yeah, I really don't think that Jimmy Butler is a very feasible reality for the Cavs. I don't know. I mean, given that he's under contract for 2 years, he's not, you know, in the situation that Paul George is, where it could probably be or possibly be a rental. I think that a ton more teams would be willing to jump in if that were the case, that Jimmy Butler was in fact available. I'd see, you know, 10 teams off the top of my head, 15, who knows how many teams would be willing to jump in and take 2 years of Jimmy Butler. And obviously most teams in the league have more assets than the Cavs. And if you're looking at a three-team construction there, why wouldn't the Bulls just trade straight up with the other team, get the same assets, and then, you know, unless they're getting something on the fringes from the Cavs in the deal. But it just seems weird to me that would happen. On the Paul George front, I think that, if the Cavs are willing to take on the risk, it is more realistic in my mind that they could acquire Paul George than Jimmy Butler, although neither are, you know, super likely to me. I tweeted earlier that I thought that a lot of it came down to whether or not Phoenix was willing to take on Kevin Love for the number four overall pick, which I think would be ridiculous for them. But, you know, if their ownership and their front office wanted to be kind of good or semi good, I guess, it could be a realistic thing for them. Maybe it would put butts in seats. And I think that the number four pick would be something that might be enticing to the Pacers if that three team conception were to happen. But like you said, I think that nothing gets it done unless it's a three team deal. And, you know, with these owners or these front office changes for the Cavs, you would think that some of that may have already broken down in terms of the structure that could have been built.
Yeah, I just think, like, the assets the Cavs have don't really get it done. I think the George thing would make a lot of sense if you could do it, just because you could maybe convince him to stick around. But, again, that could be tough as well. Those are the type of deals the Cavs probably have to make to get better, though. And it just becomes, like, can they actually make them? And those are just very large questions, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's possible that the trade could make them worse in the regular season, but better against Golden State. And obviously better against Golden State is really the only thing that we're focusing on here. So, you know, it would create some difficult decisions, especially surrounding that power forward position. You'd probably have to be scouring the veteran minimum market or, you know, potential trade market to get someone in there to at least play some of those regular season minutes. But obviously the versatility on the wing and the ability to defend would put you in a better spot against Golden State. And I think that that's ultimately all that the Cavs are focusing on in these conceptions.
100% agree on that. It's probably what they should be doing too. No one really knows what's next, Mike, but we're going to find out sooner rather than later, I think. You know, it wouldn't shock me if we're hearing about
it. It's a roller coaster.
I mean, the draft, like you said, the draft is Thursday. Free agency is 2 weeks away, 3 weeks away. This is going to happen very fast. This is going to be chaotic. But it's the Cleveland Cavaliers. Are we really surprised that this is the case?
And the NBA never sleeps. So
literally never sleeps. Like, I had this very casual week of podcasts planned out, you know, draft prep and just some general fun. And then this happens. Well, we'll see. We'll see what's next. Again, David Griffin out, Trent Redden out, Colby Altman's currently making decisions. Chauncey Billups could be the team president of basketball operations in a day or so. That could be a thing. No other candidates have really been reported as of yet. A lot feels on the table right now. LeBron's unhappy, wasn't consulted. This is the Cleveland Cavaliers post losing the title. Everything is sort of chaotic right now. But Mike, thanks for helping me break this down.
Absolutely. Always enjoy it. Thanks for having me on.
Always, sir. And don't go away just yet, everybody. There actually is another part of this podcast. I recorded a conversation with Caitlin Cooper from IndieCorners.com about the Paul George trade before we knew any of this GM stuff. Just, you can listen to that as well right after this. I'll stay by for just a quick intermission and hear myself and Caitlin talk about Paul George and without the context of David Griffin, of course, but I think there's still a lot there that you will enjoy. And we'll be back tomorrow with some kind of episode. Don't know what yet. Depends on what happens, but there will be something for you on Wednesday and then draft prep on Thursday. We'll talk to you guys again and enjoy the episode with Caitlin Cooper.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So, obviously, Indiana is now facing a very interesting situation just because of the report from Woj that Paul George says he's going to leave and test for agency next summer. And now you have all these different trade talks, all these different ideas of what possibly could come next. Caitlin, when you first saw this news, I mean, were you surprised? I mean, after what he had said publicly, like, what was your reaction to this news and the first development in what is going to be something that I think will be one of the defining draft week stories?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there was so much talk about the Lakers since February, and really everyone with the Pacers knew that Paul George is an Angelino through and through. He grew up a Kobe fan. He grew up a Clippers fan. I think there was a little bit of inevitability there to a certain extent, and where there's smoke, there's generally fire. So when he made those comments at a charity softball game about, you know, I'm a Pacer, I'm still under contract, it kind of had the general feeling that he was saying what he was supposed to say. So I don't think the Woj tweet was necessarily that surprising, as it just came out of the blue. And there you are on Father's Day, and it's like, whoa, that softball game was only 2 days ago. But I think most of Pacers' Twitter in general wasn't that surprised.
I wasn't either, to be honest. Like, full disclosure, I was not particularly shocked that that was where this was headed. It just makes sense. It's something I've always sort of assumed. But I look at this now, and I think it presents interesting questions for both teams. For Indiana, I wonder what kind of return do they want? Because I think they would probably be best inclined. And you wrote about this in a piece people should go read over at IndyCorners.com about needing to jumpstart that young era around Miles Turner, around other young pieces. The problem becomes, like, the Lakers maybe feel, and I don't necessarily agree with this, but I can understand why they might feel they don't need to pull a trigger on that deal. But then you have other teams, the Cavs, and most notably here, that could see him as a rental, could take the chance that they want to get him to buy into their winning culture, into the title aspirations. The problem then becomes, do you have enough to offer Indiana? I don't actually get why Indiana would do Love plus Chetty plus a 2021 first round pick, or Eddie Tavares, or any of these, like, the three young guys they have, or any of the second round picks that they have. I don't really think that's what Indiana should be going for in terms of a deal. So maybe it's a three-team deal, but what do you think Indiana should look to get if they're actually going to move on from George right now?
Right. I mean, there's been a lot of noise about swapping Paul George for Kevin Love. I mean, and for good reason from Cleveland's side of it, but I don't think some of the articles that are floating around out there really take Indiana's full position into account, because, like you said, I mean, some of them are saying, oh, the Pacers could be a 50-plus win team with Kevin Love, or Miles Turner could clean up some of Kevin Love's defensive mistakes. I just don't really see that, because even with Paul George, they only won 42 games last year. And Paul George is a little bit more of a threat on both ends of the floor. And while Kevin Love is a great player in his own right, I'm just not seeing how, if you add him with Miles Turner and Jeff Teague and the defensive problems the Pacers already had, that's just going to compound that. I mean, the Pacers ranked 16th in defense last year. They were in the bottom five in three-point attempts per 100 possessions allowed. I mean, I don't see how they remain a playoff team, and I also don't see how they get bad enough with Kevin Love to get a decent draft pick. In my opinion, they should be looking for, what you said, a third team. If a team isn't willing to take Paul George at a rental, maybe they'll be willing to take 2 years of Kevin Love, try to get a third team involved, and get young assets, because they already had issues last year with bridging the gap between Paul George's window and Miles Turner's window. So adding Kevin Love at 28 years old isn't really going to fix that problem.
And he's not a modern NBA player in the way Paul George is. That's sort of the other thing here. It's like, Kevin Love, I think he's really good. I think the Cavs have underutilized him to an extent. I also don't think it's unfair to say that he is not a modern power forward in a way that maybe he would have been 5 years ago, or maybe that the Cavs maybe thought they were getting when they traded Wiggins for him. He has a hard time getting back on fast breaks. He can't really defend a lot of positions. Teams are going to hunt him down in the pick and roll and in space. He hits threes. He's a very skilled playmaker. I think in the finals, when he actually was moving around and playing with extreme effort on defense, I think he can be passable. But you need a traditional rim protector next to him, I think, to maximize what he's going to do on an end. I mean, that kind of builds you into playing two bigs all the time, or being comfortable as Love as your five in extent, which I think can be deadly, but you're going to have defensive limitations there. And if I'm Indiana, like, if you're moving on from George, who is, like, a top 10 player, who is a great two-way player, who is a modern NBA star, maybe he's not, like, the true one guy, but maybe he's, like, your second-best player in a really good team. I think he'd probably be the second-best player in Cleveland if that happens, or if he goes to the Lakers, he'd be the number one guy. It's just like, I think you want the young guys, right? But, like, then the question becomes, like, what is the baseline acceptable package? Some of the teams that I think will make sense for Love would be Portland, I think would make a lot of sense. But, you know, do you want McCollum? I mean, is McCollum acceptable if Phoenix got involved? You know, is Marquise Chris or Bender or their first round pick this year, like, is that enough? I don't know. I just don't know, like, what's actually, like, the baseline level for Indiana, but, like, I feel like you have to get something. I think, like, you look at the Kings situation with Marcus Cousins, I don't love that return for them. That felt pretty low, but at least they got something when Boogie was probably going to walk anyway, especially if he wasn't going to get the Supermax.
Right. I mean, C.J. McCollum's an interesting point because he and Damian Lillard have probably been a little bit infamous here in the last couple months of anytime a player seems like they might be changing locations, they're tweeting it and essentially outwardly recruiting the player, and you kind of want to tell C.J., you know, if you're going to recruit Paul George, the Pacers are probably going to want you in return. I mean, that being said, I like Alan Crabb. I mean, his contract's a little outlandish, but I like him as a potential piece moving forward. CJ's only 25, so that's not so bad there with Miles Turner, and obviously, you know, he can score in a multitude of ways. My dream scenario would be if the Nuggets got involved because they just have so many young pieces, and you know, maybe they'd be interested in Kevin Love's ability to stretch the floor next to Nikola Jokic and open driving lanes for Jamal Murray. Maybe it works out. Maybe Kevin Love is interested in staying there more than 2 years. I don't know, but I really like Gary Harris out of Denver, and they have their own draft pick this year at number 13. That's a package I like. Gary Harris set career highs across the board. He shot above 45% on catch and shoot threes, and he's an Indiana guy. So that would be good. You're also hearing, I just heard some rumblings on Twitter about an hour ago that Philly might get involved, and that's an interesting one given that their young core isn't exactly lined up with Kevin Love, but maybe they want a veteran presence there. At the deadline, they were willing to offer Robert Covington, Okafor, and two future firsts for Paul George. Obviously, that package isn't going to be quite the same for Kevin Love, but that's a baseline, and I think Robert Covington's a good piece. He has a lot of potential as a perimeter defender, and a lot of fans probably haven't gotten that acquainted with him yet. But those sorts of packages, I mean, Zach LaVine in the number 7 would be good for Minnesota, and obviously that would be pretty ironic to send Kevin Love back where
But he'd be perfect. He'd be so good next to Towns is sort of like the thing. It's like that makes so much sense for what the Wolves want and what makes sense to Towns, but like that'd be such a weird thing. And I mean, I just can't imagine Love would be that. I sort of like feel bad for him in general because like he won the title last year. He had a really, really good this year. And then it's just the moment they lose to Golden State, he's the guy. Like there's just not really another way for the Cavs to change things up or try to improve without dealing him because they're not going to trade Kyrie, nor should they. They're not going to – Tristan's not as valuable to other teams. You know, like I pointed this out, but like math-wise, Shumpert and Channing Frye for George works. Like that's an insanely dumb deal. Like then Indiana should just like not do, and if they do that, Kevin Pritchard like should just immediately lose his job immediately. It has to be Kevin Love, and that sucks for him. I'd be mad, kind of frustrated by this if I were him. And but what else do you do for the Cavs, right? Like there's no other really option there. And for Indiana, like you're gonna try to do something. I feel like, especially because like you don't really have a choice. I mean, do you see any upside to him sticking to them trying to maybe wait till the deadline or wait or like let him walk? Is there any upside?
They could try to hold on to him and see, you know, maybe a contender gets desperate. Maybe they're willing to say, okay, let's take the rental. But man, that just seems like it would create a lot of internal discord and maybe just if you're in the locker room knowing this person doesn't want to be here and he's supposed to be our team's leader and just all the drama that's going to go along with that all season, it just seems like you'd really want to hit the reset button with Miles Turner and whatever young assets you can get now and move on. And, you know, you see some of the sites over the weekend. There's one site selling Pacers gear down there out of Indy that's already marked their prices to zero. I mean, what type of a reaction on Paul George gear? What type of a reaction are Pacer fans going to have coming to the arena knowing that, oh, well, you don't want to be here. You just want to play for the Lakers. And, you know, from my individual perspective, I understand that, you know, it's his free agency decision. He can play where he wants to play. But that isn't going to be the case for the entire fan base. And I just think that they're better off moving on now, especially since if they trade him now and get that lottery pick, or if they trade him now, they're going to have a better chance of, for lack of better terms, getting bad faster so that their lottery pick is better next year than if they hold on to him and perhaps they win more games. From that dynamic, I think that they need to move. And you know, with the Lakers situation, if they're calling Cleveland actively, maybe that, I mean, I'm sure Cavs fans don't want to hear this, but maybe that motivates the Lakers to actually be willing to give up something to get Paul George now rather than wait it out. And, you know, maybe if the Pacers are willing to take on Mozgov or Deng's bad contracts, they'll be a little bit more willing to come to the bargaining table so that the Pacers don't, in fact, lose him for nothing in a year.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've already – I don't know exactly who reported it, but I've seen it from somewhere. I might have been Shams or someone like that, but the Lakers maybe would be more inclined to add that that number two overall pick if Cleveland got involved. I kind of think they, though, even if Cleveland gets involved, I think the Cleveland deal is just a lot more complicated. I think if the Lakers call and they say, okay, we'll give you a future pick, D'Angelo Russell, and like you probably have to take one of those contracts back. I think you'd probably take like a Deng or a Mozgov contract back. But if you get a pick in Russell, like, is that enough, or do you want like another young piece? Would you want another pick? Like, is that like enough? And I just frankly, like, even if we get in and start picking out hypothetical three-team deals, I have a hard time seeing like any team actually being able to give Indiana, unless like McCollum is like available and Indiana like loves McCollum. Or I guess the Suns' pieces. I just can't see like a deal beating what the Lakers actually could offer if they decide they want a deal for him now, which gets involved, especially if that number two pick is involved. If the number two pick is involved, Indiana should, like, that to me is just enough to do that, right? Like, you get a player in that number two pick where you can take Alonzo Ball, you could take a Jackson, you could take any of the guys that you like, probably besides Markel Fultz, who's probably going to go number one. Like, that just to me seems like nothing could trump getting that pick.
Oh, yeah, I would agree. I mean, if they call and say, you know, we're nervous, we think, you know, we don't want these other teams involved, we don't want another team taking a rental, we're willing to give up the number two in D'Angelo Russell, I think you have to take that. You can't turn away from that. Even if D'Angelo had a little bit of an inconsistent season, he was a little bit better off ball than on the point, but he's still young, and like you said with the number two, I mean, a lot of people who are smarter than me that cover the draft seem to think that about the top five picks are can't miss. I mean, If you're guaranteed the number two and you can take one of those guys, I think you would have to take it. But
yeah, I think you'd have to. Like, I think you just don't really have a choice. I mean, if you're looking at let's say the Lakers, that ends up ending, what would you say is like an acceptable, like, what young players, I guess, would you want from the Lakers if that's where Paul George ends up going right now?
Ooh, that's tough. I mean, they seem to say for the last several months that Brandon Ingram's off the table. I think ideally you would want Brandon Ingram, but if he's completely off the market, then I think I would have to go with D'Angelo Russell simply because the Pacers don't know. I don't think there's a lot of upside to them re-signing Jeff Teague if Paul George is leaving. I mean, why max out Jeff Teague in his late 20s if you're not really going to be competing? You can take a chance on D'Angelo Russell, see if he continues to develop. I mean, he's young. I think I would accept D'Angelo Russell and a first-round pick and then taking back a contract if that's what the Lakers came with.
Yeah, I think I still think that might be more than what the Cavs would offer, especially unless they really like the idea of Kevin Love, which is just sort of, I guess, the thing we don't know. And like, does Indiana want to commit to a rebuild? Like, I think that's the best path. Like, I don't think, like, trying to make Kevin Love your centerpiece with Miles Turner and then paying Jeff Teague, like, actually makes a lot of sense. I don't know if you disagree with that, but that to me just doesn't seem like the way they should be building right now.
Oh no, I completely agree. I mean, with Kevin Love, like you said, in the finals and in the playoffs, you saw that he could be a little bit better defensively, and you're going to come with a little bit more effort when you know that there's the golden carrot of perhaps winning a championship at the end of the tunnel. I mean, with the Pacers, if you're not really competing for anything, what type of effort on the defensive end are you really going to get on a night-in and night-out basis? And the Pacers already had enough defensive issues on their own between Jeff Teague not fighting over screens. Monte Ellis is Monte Ellis. Thaddeus Young and some of the other fours they had were a little bit sleepy on the weak side, even though Thad could play passing lanes really well, get some steals. Miles Turner still has a ways to go in defending in space and the pick-and-roll, even though he's a really excellent shot blocker. So in that regard, if you add Kevin Love to that mix and take Paul George out when he was already covering for those errors, I think that there's no way, even if they can score points, that they can make up for how many points they're going to give up. And so to take on Kevin Love when he's in his late 20s, I don't see that as a real option. As far as, like, I see a lot of people saying, oh, don't ex- if you have to take something, then you take Kevin Lovell, I guess, in that regard. But I just don't believe that there won't be a third team, or that the Lakers won't come to the table, or that the Cavs aren't, if they're really interested in Paul George, that they won't be furiously working the phones to try to get a third team involved in an effort to keep the Lakers from signing him in a year. I mean, in that regard, what are Cavs fans thought about some of the rumblings that are out there with LeBron perhaps going to the Lakers at the end of 2018? Do you see that as a real threat?
I mean, it wouldn't shock me, I guess, but I think a lot has to happen for that to become an option. I think the Lakers would still have to be good. Like, I can't imagine LeBron is going to be comfortable not competing in some way. And I think he really believes in Kyrie, and I think that that's a factor. I think if Chris Paul goes to San Antonio, I think that blows it all up. I don't, you know, have sourcing on that or anything like that, but I think if LA is not an option and Chris Paul's in with the Spurs, out of the Banana Boat group that could link up in some capacity next summer, Chris Paul would be the second best player of that group still. They're all a little bit older. It'd be really hard to get good players around them. I think LeBron, if anything, this year kind of saw what it's going to take to compete against Golden State. I also just can't imagine he goes west. I cast a lot of doubt on that. It wouldn't shock me. I don't think people would be necessarily like mad about it. But I think like the talk about it, especially the timing of the talk about it, is just a little premature. It just feels too early to me to be trying to do that conversation. It's a year away. A lot could change. You don't know what Chris Paul's doing. You don't know if Dwayne Wade's knees are going to be. You don't know what LeBron's prioritizing. Those are all really big things. And also, like, LeBron is a guy who, looking back to his high school career, has done stuff with people that he is very close connected to. He went to St. Vincent Mary with the Fab Five, his Romeo Travis, Drew Joyce, those guys. He played for a guy, Keith Danbrot, who coached him up at the YMCA. His second high school coach was Drew Joyce Sr., Drew Joyce's dad. Cleveland was a little different because he got drafted there, but you know, his business circle, his Maverick Carter and Rich Paul, those are his friends. When he went to Miami, Dwayne Wade was there. He talked about it with Bosch, a guy he was familiar with. When he came back to Cleveland, there was the connection with Cleveland, and he sought out trying to make Kevin Love, a guy he sort of knew from USA Basketball, part of that group. Like, he's not just going to go to L.A. to go to L.A. He's going to have the connection. He's going to have to believe that he can compete. I don't know how close him and George are. I think there's a respect there. I don't think there's a deep friendship there in the way he might have with the Banana Boat guys. So
yeah, Paul George did directly say at a softball game that he has a great deal of respect for Paul George because of all the competition they've had with one another, and that he looks up to LeBron immensely, but that he hasn't discussed his future with him. He hasn't made any phone calls. I mean, now that may have changed in the last couple of days, given how much all of that's heated up. But, yeah, in that regard, I don't know how close they really are in terms of a friendship.
It also could, like, just – I mean, he could have just – not. I mean, that could not be true. Like, he's, of course, not. Maybe not going to say it publicly. We don't really know, I guess. But we'll move on to how George, I guess, could impact the Cavs if that happens in a second. But, I mean, just what likelihood – just – I mean – just, I know you don't maybe sourcing on this, but just sort of percentage maybe of what chance you think the Cavs at, like, could actually make that deal. To me, it seems very low, but I'm also just a huge cynic. I just don't ever believe things are going to happen.
I think all of that depends on who blinks first. I mean, if the Lakers see that it's a real threat, then I think that the Cavs' chances are very low. If the Lakers are sitting there really confident about, Paul George is quote-unquote hell-bent on coming to the Lakers, then the possibility goes up. I mean, and maybe they do have that conversation. Maybe LeBron convinces Paul George that, hey, I have a better chance of winning a title here in Cleveland, and winning matters to me. I can play with Kyrie Irving, who I just played on the Olympic team with. Then maybe it becomes a little bit more real. I mean, as far as that Olympic team goes, I think there's a little bit of foreshadowing there that when Coach K, the way that Coach K used Paul George on that Olympic team, Paul George wasn't expected to score a lot of points. That wasn't his role. He plugged him more or less to be a cooler on whichever player on the opposing team was going off. I mean, that was front and center against Serbia when Kyrie was kind of struggling to contain Teodosic, and Coach K switches Paul George onto the point of attack, and he's floating around the perimeter. And that really, to me, is the best version of Paul George, when you can see him going to being able to guard a point guard, to being able to guard a shooting guard, to being able to guard the wing. And then, you know, he can also chip in some points. And even better yet, he ideally still is better used as an offensive finisher than an offensive initiator. His handle's still a little loose. He still wants to split some screens, and he can get turnovers. But when he's coming off double stagger screens or just working off ball, he can be really effective. And obviously with LeBron and Kyrie, that's going to work seamlessly. So that's sort of a relationship where, you know, the Cavs could put Paul George on Kevin Durant on possession so that LeBron James isn't getting gassed and can be more effective on the other end and can create shots when he's such a superior passer and is so good at finding his teammates in the right places, and almost like a savant ability to be able to pass the ball in the exact way that so the seams line up for Kyle Korver, like we heard earlier in the season. And you know, I just think that would be a really seamless fit if Cleveland could pull that off.
I mean, I kind of wonder, though, this is where Mike sort of, I wonder about this. He's been very ball-dominant in Indiana. You know this.
Yes.
Kyrie is a very ball-dominant guy. Kyrie's success is based on him being ball-dominant. I think there's two things that the Cavs and George would have to figure out if this happens. One, is George or LeBron going to be willing to play the four full-time? Because I don't think it would make sense to put them at the two. That, to me, seems not modern. It would seem sort of problematic to make that your starting lineup. Secondly, is George going to be comfortable shooting off ball more, and is he going to be comfortable with playing a more defensive role where he's stopping the opponent's best guy while getting his shots and maybe leading some bench units? But Kyrie's going to have to shoot. Kyrie would have to give up some, I'm sure, but like Kyrie is what he is. He's less malleable than a George. That to me is an interesting question. And then that's just the fourth thing. Like, is he going to be – it's something he railed against in Indiana, even when the Pacers say we're going small. It ended up he played a lot of the three, with C.J. Miles taking on the brunt of that. Or is LeBron going to do that? I think those are questions you have to answer, but I think it would make the Cavs better defensively. I think they lose something on rebounding. I think shooting probably evens out with him in Love. But, do you think – that elevates the Cavs in a meaningful way? Like, I think it might make them better, but does it actually, like, you think that actually elevates them to another level and maybe helps them compete better with the one team that they're going to be competing against until LeBron leaves or LeBron gets too old?
Well, a couple things. As far as the four goes, you're right. I mean, and I think Paul George was right two summers ago when Larry Bird effectively said in the media, you know, he doesn't run this team, and if we want him to play the four, he's going to play the four. He was coming off a gruesome injury and wasn't really thrilled with the idea of playing the four and having to go out and hedge and taking those hits and coming back and having to block out to get rebounds and taking hits, guarding, banging in the paint. I mean, I don't think that was completely unrealistic for him to be a little bit weary about that, or I guess I should say unreasonable for him to be weary about that. And last year, I still don't think that it's something that he wants to do, but he did do it some with when the Pacers would go small with C.J. Miles. I think the better point, and I know that LeBron doesn't really like playing the four, he's more well-suited toward it than Paul George, simply because LeBron James has a post game and Paul George really doesn't. I mean, I think his points per possession on post-up plays is, I want to say that it's below the 60th percentile. I don't have that number right in front of me, but it's mostly because he lacks a counter move. He gets, even against smaller guards, he gets pushed pretty far away from the block and tends to just turn over his shoulder and fade away. He's not really good at drawing contact. Last year you saw him use a little bit of a drop step, but, and you know, and that's not the only thing that you do as a stretch four in small lineups. Obviously, you'd be wanting him to shoot the three. As far as him guarding bigger bodies on the block, yeah, you're right. I'm not sure how much he's really going to want to do that any more than LeBron does. But I do know that he relishes the idea of matching up against the other team's best player. I mean, that's something he wants to do. You would see in seasons prior where he'd go out and guard Damian Lillard. He'd go out and guard Stephen Curry. He'd guard Kawhi Leonard. I mean, so I think in that regard, he would take pride in going out for the Cavs in a potential final series or an Eastern Conference final series and saying, you know, my role tonight is to guard that person. Now, as far as giving up his shot or willing to redistribute some of those mid-range attempts where he kind of dribbles in place with the ball to get open and get free, that would be a sacrifice for him. And playing off ball is something he needs to do, but I'm not sure he knows that he would be better doing that more. I mean, and as far as meaningfully better, I don't know without another piece if that makes the Cavs equal to the Warriors, but certainly in the respect that then LeBron isn't having to take as many possessions against Kevin Durant and Draymond Green. I think it would be helpful in that regard because that isn't really something Kevin Love's going to offer them.
I think the defensive impact George could have is probably where he's honestly most valuable to the Cavs. They were putrid on defense all year. They didn't really have an answer for what Golden State did. They won games by trying to outscore them. That's how they won one game. That's just crazy, you know. But I think they could get better enough on defense where if LeBron, I guess like you could theoretically get there. I don't know for sure. No one really knows. But like if LeBron doesn't have to guard Durant and Paul George can do that, and LeBron can guard Draymond and roam off Draymond, that can create some chaos and that can create some interesting scenarios. And maybe you slap Paul George on to Curry at times and try to hide Kyrie somewhere. But it just unlocks things in a way that Kevin Love can't. And like that to me makes me think the Cavs we'll wrap it up on this. I think the Cavs, if they get a deal that works for them, if it's not giving up a ton, I think they're comfortable with the rental. Dave McMenamin reported this already. I think they'd be very comfortable going for the rental of Paul George here, trying to maybe get him to buy into signing a deal after next season, whatever that ends up being worth, and trying to win with him next year and trying to win with LeBron. I think the Cavs would do it. I think the Pacers are probably more inclined to deal him at this point, as we've talked about. But if you're the Cavs, if you're in that situation, would you be comfortable trying to just rent Paul George for the room? And even though Kevin Love isn't signed for 4 more years, 2 more years isn't nothing.
Right. I mean, exactly. I think that's the case with involving a third team or, you know, even with – is that they can look at it and say, you know, Paul George is a flight risk and Kevin Love at least for 2 seasons isn't. And I think that's going to be valuable. And I agree with you that it's something that if I were the Cavs, I would be willing to do the rental and just hope that because Paul George values winning as much as he says that he publicly does, that he would get there and play with LeBron and want to stay.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting. I think those two would be a very modern pairing, and I think them and Kyrie would be really interesting. But Kalen, thank you so much for coming on. Just let everyone know out there where they can find you on Twitter and just kind of if there's anything you've written or are working on that you want to just tease, feel free to do so.
Oh, right. Great. This was a great conversation.
Yeah. I appreciate
Cavs
it.
Fans, I have a post up right now about a lot of the stuff we talked about, just talking about the Pacers regaining some leverage by trying to get Kevin Love involved, talking to the Cavs. That'll be up on the front page over at IndyCornrows.com, and also my Twitter handle is @C2_Cooper.
So give her a gig. Thank you again for coming on. Give her a follow, and we'll be back on Thursday, unless some news breaks, I guess. But back on Thursday with a draft preview pod, and we'll talk to you then on the Locked on Cavs podcast.